Market Music with Fairbairn and Russell.
Welcome back to Market Musings with Fairbairn and Russell. And we said last time it'd be a very busy week for us, and we weren't wrong. I think we've done four podcasts over the weekend, and we've had a number of returning guests, and this podcast is no different because we have another returning guest. We had this chap on, I think, probably 5 or 6 weeks ago, and he operates in the cryptocurrency space. It's Malcolm Pally. Hello and welcome back, Malcolm.
Hi, Mark. Hi, Kenny. How are you doing?
Very well. And how are you doing? Are you self-isolating? Or how are things going?
I'm in Gibraltar, as you know. That's where Coincilium, my company's based, and it's locked down here as well. The only difference between here and the UK is it's much smaller, so it's easier for them to police. There's only one park. Mm-hmm. And Lord help anyone who's actually loitering around doing what they shouldn't do. It's not exactly a police state, but you know you haven't got the same degree of open spaces. So everyone is pretty observant and respectful of the protocols.
Fairly calm.
This the supermarket are well stocked. People have stopped fighting over toilet roll.
You had that problem as well, did you?
Oh, yeah. It was here. I mean, fortunately, I didn't need to buy any. I had some in stock. But, without going into too much in the sordid details, there's only so much toilet paper you can use.
Exactly.
But it's all okay. I mean, it's not ideal. Everyone's had to change the way they're working.
Yeah.
From our point of view, we're kind of used to working remotely anyway, because our CEO, Eddie Travier, is based in Southeast Asia, in Hong Kong and in China. Mm-hmm. And he's always, we're always working remotely when we do conference calls, which we do for years with people. They could be anywhere in the world. So this way of working isn't new to us. We do have an office in a small office in London, which is now, not being used for the time being, but we'll have to sort of see how that goes. But I think that there's going to be some major shifts in the way people work. The one thing that has affected our industry, that there were a lot of physical sort of conferences going on around the world. We haven't historically done too many of them. We only do the important ones, but they involve a lot of traveling. So I think people are starting to realize that how much of the travel is superfluous and how much the travel is important. Because, when it all calms down and things start getting back to normal, hopefully, I think we're going to start seeing, a lot less of the type of travel that people have done. They just hop on a plane to a meeting, whatever, without thinking too much about it. And I think that's going to change a little bit. I think we're going to prioritize and see if we do more work online and meet virtually, we probably will.
Yes. I think what you're saying, Malcolm, is the days of the company jolly are over. I think
Well, I mean, I'm at an age where I don't like, if someone tells to me I've got to go to New York or I've got to go to, I don't know, wherever, I don't think, wow, fantastic. I think, oh, do I have to? Because I'm just tired of it. And it is, I think you get to a certain age where it's not that much fun. But the jollies, we saw quite a lot of that going on in the crypto space when the token market boom was on, with the ICOs, and there were a lot of those going on then. But again, that was really when it's coming towards the end of a phase when everyone's going crazy. But I think that's a part aspect of business that's going to change. I think for people in the mining space, it's still going to be challenging because, these mines are usually in parts of the world where you have to jump on a plane. Mm. And so I think that kind of travel is still going to go on. But, I think people are just going to rationalize. They're going to sort of think, do I need to travel? And also, I think a lot of the travel to countries like in Australia at the moment, you can't fly in and out. Mm. So, until those restrictions are sort of relaxed a little bit, people are just going to have to get by. The other thing with it as well is whenever I went to Singapore, as soon as you land, you get off the plane and there's someone standing there scanning you for your temperature. Mm-hmm. Of course, that's a very important thing to do. I think it's probably more important to do it before you get on the plane. But ultimately, I think it's something that you might see at airports where, you know, people are getting on flights. They're going to check to see if they're actually carrying a fever or something like that. It would be a sensible thing to do. You know, we just have to sort of look and see what the world's going to look like post COVID-19.
Yeah, we do. Exactly. And I wondered if I could get your opinion on that. I know last time we spoke, you told us about your history and it was very diverse. You've been involved in lots of different sectors and industries. And you've probably seen a crash or two, I guess. What is your opinion on this? Do you think it's sort of going to be short lived and there'll be a swift recovery, or is this going to kickstart something, you know, not very nice?
Well, from an investor's point of view, is that what you're, as in, you know, defending your...
Well, I guess both. I mean, I guess really the general economy, but then, yeah, what can investors do in this time to either take advantage or not?
Yeah, I think that I'm of an age where I've done a lot and I've my career's probably towards the end rather than the beginning, but equally, I've seen a lot. This is totally new for me. This is totally new for everyone.
Yeah.
Because unless you were perhaps born during the war where you saw, you know, unprecedented circumstances. So, but even so, it is quite clear that the economic impact of people not being able to work, mm-hmm. shops laying off staff and factories and not everything but the essential going on is going to have an absolutely massive impact on the economy going forward. And I don't think that this is something that can be, that is just going to be sort of shrugged off and then back to normal.
Okay.
I think it's going to take a while for a rebalancing to occur. I think fortunately this time round, more so than ever before, you can see governments around the world throwing money at the situation, in the sense that they're, banks are being accommodating, you know, they're being proactive. Landlords are encouraged to make concessions to tenants. Banks are, or lenders are giving people breaks. So this again is unprecedented. So I think the pain and the relief is not going to be as acute as a lot of people perhaps might anticipate, and I think we'll just sort of manage to get by. But obviously, the impact of actually all this money being thrown into the economy has got to, you know, that's not without consequence either.
Sure.
I think that sort of those with a more conservative view will look at this and say, well, it's got to be paid for in future, in the sense that, our taxes are going to go up or something along those lines. But I think the quantities that we're talking about, particularly perhaps more so in the States, are so huge.
Yeah.
And it's just sort of lobbed onto the debt.
Yeah.
And again, they're so huge. It's like having a credit card mm-hmm. account that's maxed out and with no ability to pay it down, no matter how much tax. You know, don't forget, there's a limited amount of tax, you can actually impose on the public. So I think that it's coming back to, look, this has got to lead to an inflationary condition or conditions around the world. I can't see how that can be avoided. The question is, we don't know when that is going to kick mm-hmm. in. I think I would caution against anyone thinking it's going to happen too quickly. And also I would be prepared for it to be very bad. I don't know if it would go as far as sort of the hyperinflation of Weimar Germany, but equally, which by the way took 10 years to actually kick in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a long process that starts slowly, gradually, and then goes very fast.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, with the demand for the dollars outside the US still high, it's probably supporting the dollar price. But I think that we're at the beginning, with the end of the with the beginning of the end of the dollar
demise.
It's the beginning of the end of it. It's reign as a reserve currency.
As a reserve currency. And
And how long that takes to actually, come back is no one can say. That's the unknown. And I don't think that, you know, anyone who's going to go out. For me, it's the time to be investing in anything with some degree of scarcity. I mean, I'm a very big gold advocate. I'm also, as you know, I'm into crypto as well. Mm-hmm. And I'm a big advocate of Bitcoin. And I would buy, and I do buy, and I hold both.
Yeah.
And I also own mining stocks. And I think those are positions that I'm comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that I'm not in them to actually look for a short-term spike or gain. I'm in them because I'm more comfortable given the current economic climate, sitting in those kinds of investments than I am. And obviously, my activities were in Coincilium. I can see the environment for cryptocurrencies is going to grow. So I'm sort of in the picks and shovels of that business, but that's very specialized. You know, I think that's not something that has got a huge history that people understand how digital scarcity of Bitcoin will act in comparison to gold. Going forward, but you know, that's really a different world. But I think the bottom line is that I think people who have got property will look at property, you know, for the next year or two, whatever, as being, well, it's there. I don't know how much money I'm going to earn out of it, but I think it's a difficult one. But for me, I'm comfortable with investments in anything related to precious metals and the area of technology that I'm in because I understand it.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I wonder if I could just quickly apologize if it's a bit of a newbie question, but obviously you said that the inflation is the demise, it causes the demise of currency. But what causes inflation? Is it because there's just too much money being printed, too much money out there? Is that what causes inflation?
Well, in principle, it's too much money chasing too few goods and services.
Right. Okay.
So the price of those goods and services goes up because there's the money's out there. In 2008, the money that was printed to avert the global financial crisis was went straight to the banks, and the banks hoarded the money.
Yeah.
So it never got into the public's hands. But now. It was contained.
Yeah.
But because it's going into the hands of the public, which is kind of offsetting the pain for the people who have been furloughed or the companies that are struggling, and it's still, you know, it's not necessarily going to go on sort of yachts and high living. But it's still going to make, hopefully, offset any potential deflationary environment, which is the opposite when there's less money and prices have to go down because there's less money around that's really a different set of circumstances.
Okay.
But inflation is that's the fundamental economic principles, dilution, if you think about it, to a company
exactly.
that issues stock.
Yeah.
The more stock there is, the less your shares are worth, unless the company does something to stimulate the value within the business.
But the other thing is, it's like on the other side, you no one's going to actually say, no, the government should not take any action and just let people suffer. No one's going to say that, are they? So it kind of puts governments in a tricky position, I suppose, in that sense.
Exactly. And I wouldn't be an advocate of saying, no, let them all feel the pain, because clearly the pain in the short term, it could be extremely acute.
Exactly.
But it's just really, the point is that nothing is without consequence.
Yeah.
And the consequence of doing this, particularly on a global economy that's so indebted,
yeah.
is that you're just pushing us closer to that inflationary environment where, and that affects people's pensions and their savings. And it's why a lot of people, you know, borrow tend to be better off in these situations than people who save, you know, and that's the world we live in.
Can I drag you back to Coincilium for a minute, Malcolm?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, I noticed you had a new sort of funky newsletter out at the weekend. Was this the new style going ahead?
Yeah, that's, I mean, we've been working on this for a little while before the COVID-19 issue. What we kind of figured was we announced a strategic investment from one of our close associates, actually a company we've invested in, called RSK, and they've now become quite a significant player in the space. They the parent company's IOV Labs in Gibraltar. I'm also on the board there as well. But we invested in them when they were a very small company, and they are developing their own protocol. This is a significant global business now. They've become very, very big. And they've invested in Coincilium strategically to bring in our kind of know-how. And also Eddie, our CEO, is going to be heading up a joint venture between Coincilium and RSK in Singapore once. Mm-hmm. But obviously COVID-19 has changed the landscape. So we've had to it's not stalled, but it's going to be a couple of months before we actually can start initiating that. But part of the that process, sort of getting back to the newsletter, was we've been sort of using this now as a digest for all news and developments, and we've always sort of communicated with people who have registered for our newsletter. But the reason for doing this new format is because this investment we've had kind of invigorated us to and positioned us very well going forward. So we wanted to put a new format newsletter together ahead of what we expect to be an upturn in the blockchain technology and cryptocurrency market. And this is providing not just Coincilium related news, but also news on the markets, on the cryptocurrency market. We're going to have a regular feature from an over-the-counter platform, brokers in Gibraltar, who we know and work with, and they're providing a regular report on the crypto markets. We're also putting educational links in there, so links to particularly informative, in our view, podcasts and also articles. Eddie, our CEO, wrote a Medium article, which is well worth looking at, and that's in our newsletter, about how blockchain can be of benefit in the post-COVID-19 world because of the trustlessness and the immutability. Things like fake news, there's various other various other reasons why decentralized services can actually really, really shine in a world which is going to change quite dramatically. And I would urge any listener to have a look at that and read so that you could get a good understanding of that. And I think if you've got the link to the newsletter, then his article's contained in there as well.
Yeah, we'll put out a few of the articles after this podcast. And hopefully maybe Fairbairn and Russell can find their way onto it if you keep doing these interviews, Malcolm.
Absolutely. Well, I can assure you one thing. What can I assure you? I can promise you one thing, that once we've done this, and I will definitely put this interview in our next newsletter. How's that?
Yeah, deal. That's a deal. Yeah.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. On to your favourite subject, Malcolm. Bitcoin.
What's that?
Bitcoin. Yes. So the last time we spoke, I'd obviously just invested some money in Bitcoin, and it was it was hovering about $9,000, and then obviously the world is a no, I'm not going to blame anyone. No,
I'm used to it.
Not over the podcast, maybe face to face. No, I'm only kidding. Obviously, the world's a different place now, and I think at one point Bitcoin plummeted to, was it $3,800? But
it might have gone.
I think it was like a 2 hour. Period, but it was hammered. But I mean, it's back up now, pushing $7,000. So it seems to have recovered pretty quickly. Well, what's your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think that when we spoke last, my views are very different to how they are now, in very specific areas. And because it happened so quickly, it's very easy to identify. I think that what we were looking at then was, you know, without the interference of COVID-19 and the economic consequences of the shutdown of the economy, we were looking at this as being a relatively uncorrelated asset, in the sense that it was there, it was working, transactions were happening on the Bitcoin blockchain very effectively, and also gold was strengthening as well, and Bitcoin was kind of holding its own. But once the kind of the economic crisis hit, then there was a dash for liquidity. And what became apparent was there were a lot of people who actually held Bitcoin who either held it on leverage or needed to cash in. And Bitcoin was one of the most liquid markets there was. And gold sort of fell as well, but not to the extent that Bitcoin did. And I think it was that rush for liquidity, rush for the door, that really indicated that it wasn't as uncorrelated as we imagined. But of course, what's happened since is that it got down to a level where those who were buying at that level were the real true believers. You know, at 3,800 or 4,000, don't think it stayed there for long. Those people are the strong hands. You know, they're the people who would go down with a ship. You know, they're not people who are just thinking, well, it might be good here, because the people who were selling the Bitcoin were people who perhaps didn't really, you know, understand or didn't really believe in it enough. Because it's not like gold, you know, as I think you said, Mark, before, gold has got a history of performance. Bitcoin hasn't. So the people who buy Bitcoin or have been mostly younger people who sort of get it in principle, but a lot of people followed on who were more traditional and looking at this as okay, you know, in a more speculative way. And you know, the fundamentals of the Bitcoin blockchain haven't changed. It's still very much you know, works. The digital scarcity is there, but it's just the belief in it as a store of value was undermined by the crisis, and certainly by people's opinion of you know, or not so much opinion, but you know, the need for liquidity, the ease of selling it, and perhaps leverage positions. So that's what I think impacted it. But you saw since then, and that's, you know, less than 4 weeks ago, it's gone from 3,800 to nearly, and it was very short space of time in that, but it very quickly recovered. It's now sitting at just under 7,000, 6,800. And I think it's going to, I don't think there's a rush to actually own it. I think that it's probably now as deleveraged a market as we'll ever see. And I think it's probably going to sort of hover around here for a little while until we get another major event that perhaps brings people's attention to it. And that could be in itself the price action, or it just could be greater awareness, which I think is something that is creeping into the market as well. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. And I believe the Bitcoin halving is coming up in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, and now there's another thing. I sort of changed my perspective on that as well. I think that's a very important aspect, because what happens is the amount of Bitcoin that are thrown off by the protocol as rewards to miners is actually halving. So there's going to be less new Bitcoin around. But my view before was this could be a significant catalyst, but it became apparent that was probably factored into the price. People were buying that, and it was, you know, already on the expectation of the halving. Because ultimately, the amount of Bitcoin available, the new Bitcoin is a very small proportion of that. I think it's a good, it's a strong fundamental, but it's not necessarily an indication of a short term kind of price influencer. I think it's a long term fundamental that and again, of course, in 4 years' time, again, there'll be another halving. So mm-hmm. the amount of supply is reducing gradually, but you know, the overall demand and supply is going to come from those who hold, who want to sell, and those who want to buy, and how much the market will price that. But the halving, as I say, it's important fundamentally, but on a long term, more I believe now I'm more focused on the fact that that's not a short term price driver, that's a long term fundamental thing.
And what about other cryptos then, Malcolm? I mean, we talk a lot about Bitcoin. I get the impression that's your preferred one, but how do the other ones stack up compared to it? What's the sort of difference between them?
Ah, okay. Well, Bitcoin are kind of like treasury bonds. You know, they're the gold standard, if you like. It's,
okay.
They're not sovereign issued, so yeah. it is that uncorrelated asset. But when you're talking about other kinds of tokens, that they generally are associated with a project, a protocol, a business, if you like, that has issued these tokens, and we've had through the last certainly up to 2018, I think 4,000, 5,000 tokens, different tokens issued,
yeah.
And obviously a lot of them have failed because the projects were not viable.
Yeah.
And I think that if you look at the tokens in the top 100, you can say that those are all likely to be viable projects.
Okay.
So I would say that the top 100 at the outset are probably as far as you go. And then there's the top 10. And the top 10, going down from Ethereum, which is the number two, and Ripple are probably, as tokens, the ones that are most likely to hold their value. And then you've got various others. I won't go through them all now because I think we can put a list down there.
Yeah, but that'd be good.
I'm sort of keen on some blockchain tokens, and some I think are undervalued. We Coincilium own a lot of RIF, R-I-F. Which is the token for the RSK blockchain, which is which we think is undervalued at the moment. But there's also Icon as well, which is quite an interesting project. So I think to start getting involved in all the other tokens, you have to understand the projects. A little bit like buying shares in a company, you'd want to understand what the business is doing before you buy the shares.
Okay.
But with Bitcoin, it's a little bit, as I say, it's like buying gold or like buying treasuries.
Yeah.
You know, it's the kind of, it's not reliant on any one project for it to work.
Okay. And are they all finite? Are they all going to hit a limit that they can't be any more an issue?
No.
Oh, they're all, okay.
No,
they're all different.
Well,
okay.
They're all set up in different ways.
Okay.
So, they're not necessarily, some of them are there are miners involved in some aren't, some are okay. Just literally they have a stated amount of tokens that are going to be issued, but you have to look at the white paper on each of the projects to
yeah.
see what the structure is.
So if someone wants to get involved with it, then maybe it's better. I'm not pushing Coincilium too much, but maybe that's the best thing to do is
go
to get
on,
involved
then.
With Coincilium if it's too confusing for the individual to sort of understand all these different cryptos. Maybe
yeah.
it's worth going
yeah.
to a company like yours and investing in that sense.
I can possibly say seriously. That's why we set up Coincilium in the first place, because we believe that once we sort of saw the technology, and when Coincilium was set up in 2014, effectively, although it listed in end of 2015, we did it with the view that mostly at that time there weren't tokens, there was just Bitcoin, but blockchain technology was born because Bitcoin was the first blockchain. So we saw all the applications there, and what we believed was that, and still do to a great degree, is that it's not going to be possible for people to really get a good understanding, or the average investor to be able to spend enough time to get a good understanding of this sector. So we, you know, Coincident was always intended to be a proxy into the sector. And, you know, anyone who sort of wanted to take a long-term view that this sector was, okay, I get it, there's something in there, and these guys know what they're doing. Because ultimately, some people have a little bit of difficulty understanding what we do, because they try to pigeonhole us. Well, you know, we are, yes, we're an investor, we have investments in this sector, we also are advisors, but I think importantly, we are, we want to be venture builders, and we are, to a degree, looking at developing our own projects. We've got one we're working on in Gibraltar, which is to develop a blockchain technology lab, which we've started on. We announced an MOU, and we've undertaken our first commercial project. It's a very small starting point, but ultimately, because of the resources here in Gibraltar and the understanding of the sector and the fact that there's now, we're now seeing a significant demand for the technical expertise to build blockchain solutions. This was something we felt we wanted to be in. And we're looking at lots of other ventures here as well, plus the venture we're doing in Southeast Asia. So I think it's more like we're, you know, we understand the sector. And again, a lot of it is down to our CEO, Eddie Travis, who's been in this space since 2013. And we've got tremendous connections. So that's really what we are sort of looking at. So yes, to a degree, you know, if people want exposure to this sector and certain tokens, although we don't really have a huge focus on buying individual tokens, we'd sooner, you know, have equity in companies, and we'd sooner have positions in, you know, businesses that are active in this space, and that kind of thing. And also maybe, you know, if we can add value to a project by offering our advisory services, then we'll do that as well. But we're sort of, you know, we're looking at this whole space and seeing how we can create value out of it.
And what's the best way for an investor to get involved with Coincilium? I mean, do you direct portfolio management, or would it be through the stock market listing?
Yeah, we don't. I mean, we have kind of various activities, but ultimately our shares are traded on the what is now the Aquis exchange.
Okay.
You know, any stockbroker, online broker, I think the ticker symbol is COIN, COIN.
Okay.
Our shares are traded, and they can be bought through, they can be bought in an ISA as well. So that's always a good thing. So yeah, I mean, it's just, it's the Aquis exchange. It's not the AIM, but it, nonetheless, you know, there is a degree of liquidity there, and we hope that's going to improve now on the basis of the Aquis's purchase of the exchange. Okay. So, but it is, I think, it's an exciting year for this sector.
Great. Okay, Kenny, have you got anything to sort of finish up with?
I was just going to talk about, obviously, I mean, I've got some Bitcoin, I've got some Ripple, but I bought that through Revolut.
Right.
What we should possibly do is get you on another podcast, Malcolm, and just run through how easy it is to open up you can get an online wallet, you can get a physical wallet. Yeah. I mean, what's the differences and what's the pros and cons? I mean, it's all, a lot of it's all new to me, and I imagine most of the people listening as well.
Yeah. I think I'd be very happy, and that is probably a subject for a separate podcast. But in principle, when you're buying through different providers, they are the custodians. So if you're buying on Revolut, which I use as well sometimes for buying Bitcoin, you're getting the price exposure, and Revolut are holding your Bitcoin in a big pool. So what happens there is it's not exactly the same as, you know, the people we refer to as Bitcoin maximalists like to own their own keys and their own Bitcoin so that no one can touch them. So what happens when they go into a pool such as with Revolut is, I don't know this for a fact, but I'm pretty sure that if they have thousands of Bitcoin and someone selling 10 and someone else wants to buy 10, they do the trade within their pool. So you don't know you know, what Bitcoin's yours. And it's a little bit like gold. Sometimes gold that's not allocated can be double sold. And I'm not suggesting for 1 minute that's what Revolut do, because that would be quite irresponsible. But, you know, that's for their own kind of fiduciary controls that they'd, you know, hopefully not be doing anything too risky. Mm. But ultimately, you know, I think what you can, at the end of the day, see is that you get exposure to the Bitcoin price rather than actually ownership of the Bitcoin.
Yeah, yeah, it's nice and easy for somebody like me, but I'm interested. I mean, it would be quite handy if I had my debit card at hand, and you could give me an idiot's guide on how to do it for another podcast. It would certainly be it'd be worthwhile, and it's there forever for a reference for somebody else as well. Yeah. But I think we'll want to throw another 60-second challenge at you, Malcolm. And you've talked a lot about Bitcoin, and you've talked a lot about gold. So how about a Bitcoin versus gold?
Oh, ooh. Yes. Nice.
Okay. That's a really interesting one, because the last few years, there's kind of an interesting dynamic between gold bugs and Bitcoin bugs. And we put together some events that were actually pitching them against each other. And what tends to happen is the gold bugs can't stand Bitcoin, but the Bitcoin enthusiasts, the Bitcoin bugs, are open to both. They understand that they both solve the same problem. They both offer digital scarcity. No, so they both offer scarcity. One is physical, the other's digital, and they offer a hedge against any economic disaster or crisis that we are potentially going through now. So my take is that I think that because of the history of gold, I think gold is going to be the most obvious go-to, and we're seeing tremendous shortages in the gold market at the moment for physical gold. Really high premiums being charged. There's over £100 premium on physical, and they're out of stock. A lot of the refineries in Switzerland are closed down at the moment because of the lockdown there. So I think gold is right now the go-to asset. And I think that what we'll see is, we'll see once that starts moving, then people will start turning to Bitcoin because perhaps it hasn't moved as fast. And I think that you'll also see that kind of extra demand come in on top of the sort of organic demand for Bitcoin that comes from people who understand the asset, but they both offer the same kind of solution. I think gold bugs will say they're more comfortable with gold because it's tried and tested. They can see it and feel it. But anyone who understands Bitcoin will also understand that it still represents the same kind of solution. We look at it as digital gold. It is scarce. Okay. I don't put one against the other. I think they're both good solid solutions and solid kind of propositions in this crisis that we're going through.
Great. I would agree. And I haven't bought any crypto yet, but it looks like if I do, I'm going to get a better price than Kenny, which is a little bonus there.
Which is what it's all about, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. But we're coming up on about 40 minutes. So I think that was, again, a great chat there, Malcolm.
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity. I'm very happy to support you guys. I think you're doing a great job. I love the fact that it's kind of informal and relaxed, and and I don't have to sort of sit here and walk on eggshells. So you're both doing a great job as well.
Thank you. Thanks.
Yep. Appreciate the good comments. And I just want to know what kind of clock you use in Gibraltar, because that 60-second challenge lasted 4 minutes there.
3 minutes.
4 minutes.
4 minutes. Okay. Well, that's one thing you should have learned. I've known you a long time, Kenny. You should know that about me. Don't ever give me a 60-second challenge. I can't do anything in a minute that I can do in 4 minutes.
Yeah.
I didn't want to cut you off. It was good.
No, we just let you go. So we did. So I wind up, Toy. That's what you're like.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. So It's all good. Right. I appreciate the time, Malcolm. Thanks a lot, as usual.
Okay. Thank you, Malcolm. Cheers.
Okay.
Cheers.
Great. Bye.
Thank you for listening to another podcast from Market Musings with Fairbairn and Russell. Hopefully, if you can join us next time, we'll be talking to Harvey Sinclair, who is the CEO of eEnergy, and their company is all about energy efficiency as a service. Tune in next time.